Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. This is Renee. Welcome back to Renee's Heart to Heart. I feel like I haven't been on the air in forever. I am finally settled in my new home in Lake Worth. And while I say settled, I use that term very loosely. I'm really not settled, but it's getting closer every day. But it gave me reason to talk a little bit about hoarding. And I've always considered myself a little bit of a hoarder because it's been a family joke for years that, I would stop on the side of a street and pick up something that somebody else had in their garbage if I thought it was cool. I've gone to flea markets and garage sales as long as I can remember. So I knew I had a little bit of that going on. But here's what I found out when we moved from a 4,000 square foot home to 1,800 square feet. And that is, I have way, way too many clothes. And I have a feeling those of us who grew up in the baby boomer years, I was born in 1948, protocol for starting school and stuff like that, I tried to remember if I felt like I was underprivileged. I didn't. But, you know, if you got three new blouses and three new skirts, back in those days you didn't wear pants to school, by the way, you were very lucky, and a new pair of shoes and a new pair of sneakers. So I didn't have a lot of clothes as a kid, and I got thinking about it, and I was remembering closet space and dressers. Often my sister and I shared a dresser. She'd get three drawers and I'd get three drawers. And our closet was no bigger than, maybe a 6 foot long closet. We've become, everything's big. Everything's big now, and everything's a lot, and everything is too much for you to ever possibly use. I said to somebody the other day, what do you use, a laptop? And they said, well, I have a laptop, I have an iPad, I have a tablet. And I thought to myself, why do you need all that stuff? To be honest with you, now that I have a good phone, I don't really miss the computer, except for my show and to do work on, write articles and stuff like that. I can keep an eye on my emails and send emails back on my phone and see my Facebook page and get my messages and all that kind of stuff without a computer. But some of us are walking around with four or five different ways to talk to a whole bunch of people that very often we don't know. It's become a little bit, too much, just too much. So the big thing that I realized is that I had to get rid of a lot of clothes. So, of course, I made boxes for different people, and I'm not finished yet. I will be doing some more of that. But I realized, that it is easy to let things build up. And a lot of the men in my life say, well, don't you just every now and then go through grandma or mom and just, get rid of old stuff? And I said, only if it's like, looks old. If it doesn't look old, then I guess I don't do that. And I think that comes from being frugal. I think that comes from not wanting to throw something away that's still good. So it did teach me a lesson, though. We downsized to make it a lot less work, that 4,000 square foot house, mopping all the floors, vacuuming and then mopping all the floors was a chore. And this little place, 1,800 square feet, I can have cleaned in about, I don't know, an hour and a half, bathrooms and everything. It will be nice once we get all settled in. Right now, I will have an office space, but I'm sitting in an adorable little alcove that's off my kitchen, and it's windows all the way around, and it's very, very comfortable. So we're very happy that we made this move. But I also wanted to talk today about some issues that are happening out there with illnesses. And the reason I'm talking about this is because I have an older granddaughter who has four children, and she is nonstop with a baby on her hip. The reason she is inseparable from this child is, first of all, he was born with birth issues. He was born with bilateral, that means both of his feet were club. And he also was born with a couple holes in his heart, which seems to be fixing itself. And several months ago, he got MRSA-infected spinal meningitis. So it was really, really a rough road for her to hoe. So she's been dealing with that. They've been casting the baby's feet. The casting didn't work. They put like splints and did surgery on his heels, and nothing worked. So in the interim, she has three other kids, two little girls and a little boy. And this weekend, she started feeling really bad headache, lots of pain in her back, in her neck, migraine kind of a thing. And she did all the normal things. They did ice packs. My daughter-in-law called me, and I said, put her in a dark room, make sure it's nice and cool, put some lavender on her temples, and ice on the back of her neck, and see if just total relaxation can calm her down. Well, it didn't. She slept for almost the whole day. But when she woke up, she was even worse. She's in the hospital now. And they did a spinal tap. They did blood tests. They can't find anything that's wrong. So today they're going to do more tests, and she's seeing a neurologist. Now here's my point. You girls out there that are, in some cases, working a 40-hour-a-week job, coming home and taking care of your kids, taking care of your home, making all the meals, doing all the grocery shopping, doing most of the laundry. Even when you have help from a good spouse, even when you have an older child that helps you, that's a lot of responsibility. And you need to have some downtime. Take it from somebody who knows. You need to have an opportunity at least once a day where all you do is sit. Learn meditation. Learn a few yoga moves. Do something that just brings you down a notch or two. Now, when I say that, it doesn't need to be 3 hours locked in your room. When I say 10 minutes, I mean 10 minutes to just stop the clock from racing, to just bring yourself down a notch or two, and you can save yourself migraine headaches, shoulder stress, even problems when you're having your menstruation. All of these things can be helped by a little bit of 10 to 15 minute relaxation. Now, I don't, obviously it didn't help Melissa at this point in time because it's too far advanced and her plate has been way, way, way too full. And now she's going to need some additional help. And I'd like everybody to keep some good vibes and some prayers going on out there that nothing really serious is wrong except for stress. Now, a lot of you roll your eyes when you hear the word stress. Everybody deals with stress, and that's true. That's absolutely, positively true. And some of us can do it without a hitch, and some of us cannot. But stress kills people every day, every day. Such a simple thing as not ever relaxing. You know, I can remember times as a young woman when the kids were little, I worked two jobs, I did all this kind of stuff. I'm not saying I did everything perfect either. My house was always a mess. There was always a kid that didn't have the right shoes or didn't have this or didn't have that. And yet, I can remember growing a lump on my forehead, a lump like a goose egg. I was afraid to tell anybody about it. I was in my 30s, and I thought I was growing a tumor on my head, in my brain. I didn't know where it was coming from. It was right on my forehead, over my right eye. If I bent over to pick up one of the kids, David was a little guy then, if I picked him up, it would hurt so bad I'd have to put my hand over my head when I bent over. I didn't know what was wrong. And finally, you could see the lump on my head. You could see it. It looked like a goose egg. I went to the family doctor, who I didn't have a lot of faith in, I might add. Nice guy, but every time you went to him, he looked it up in a book, which doesn't make you feel real secure. He looked at me and he says, we talked for a long time. He did some tests. Everything came back okay. And he said, do you clench your teeth? And I said, yes, I do. And he said, you've made a Charlie horse in the muscles in your face. I said, what? He said, you got to relax. He says, I'm going to write you a prescription for tranquilizers. I said, are you crazy? I said, I have four kids. I watch seven others every day. Three of them are special children. You can't put me on tranquilizers. So he said, well, he said, you got to do something to relax, Renee. You have to do something to alleviate some of the stress. Now, this was 35 years ago, everybody. 35 years ago, and people still understood stress. The same significance wasn't put on it because we didn't understand it fully. But we did understand that stress could cause heart attacks, even skin disorders. Skin disorders could be really bad if you had too much stress. Itching, dryness of skin, all this kind of stuff. Because once you're in a mode of stress like that, even your organs don't do the job that they're asked to do. Your kidneys, your liver, your heart, all of those organs struggle when the rest of your body is under stress. So I went home that day, and I thought, okay, if that's all that's wrong with me, I can do something about that. And this was not a time of people talking about yoga. I mean, it was hippie era. It was the 70s, and people talked about peace and relaxation and smoking weed and LSD and all of that kind of stuff. It makes me wonder now when I reflect if maybe that's why everybody went off the deep end, because stress had gotten so far out of hand that some of the people who realized what was going on in their lives went too far the other way. Anyway, I went home that day, and I love tea. I love flavored tea. I love good tea. I put all the kids down for a nap. It was winter time. I could sit in front of my dining room windows and watch the snow fall, turned off all the noise, no TV, no radio, no nothing, and just drank a very, very hot cup of tea and stared out the window. And all I let myself think about was how hot the tea was. And I gained some control over being wound too tight. The lump on my forehead went away eventually. It took several weeks of me, you know, every day, taking just, sometimes it would only be 8-10 minutes. More often than not, it was close to 15, because when I laid the kids down for their nap, sitting quietly and listening to make sure everybody had fallen asleep gave me that opportunity to feel like I wasn't wasting time. You girls out there listening are probably smiling now, thinking to yourselves, yeah, that's how I would be. I know that this isn't done, that isn't done. This has got to be finished before the end of the day. I get it. So it helped, and it made a difference. And unbeknownst to me at that point in time, I was teaching myself how to meditate, how to slow everything down so that I could become less tense, also less irritable. You know, I always prided myself in having a pretty good, demeanor. I'm not a screamer. I'm not, somebody who loses it at the drop of a hat, although I can have a bad temper, but it's not my everyday persona. But that even helped that, the stress that you feel like you have to scream at somebody every now and then just to alleviate some of that stress kind of goes away. So the point I'm making is, if you're a young woman and your responsibilities are great, if you have children, even one child, and sometimes one child is more of a job than five, you need to learn how to relax yourself, because stress can manifest itself in so, so many different ways. Stretching exercises, meditation, lavender, soaking baths, and another big thing to do for yourself is a quiet walk. Even if it's only around the block, with nobody talking to you, with no questions to answer, you walk around the block, and it will clear your head. It will put you in a better place. So, those are just some ideas. I suspect that there's a lot of women out there, even women that are my age now, women that are younger with young children, that need to be reminded that it's okay for them to take that little bit of time every day and spend it alone with yourself and bring yourself to a better place. So, on that note, let's move to hanging on to things that you have no need for anymore. It's hard sometimes if you come from a background where having a lot of stuff was out of reach, having a lot of toys, a lot of clothes, a lot of jewelry, a lot of personal things that make us feel like we're more successful. So then when you get the opportunity, you kind of go overboard. Some of the hoarding shows that we watched, one of my favorites was the two ladies, the two sisters, who every day shopped. And their house was filled with boxes of appliances. And I remember on one of the shows, Shelley and I talked about the fact that it has to have something to do with never having just the conveniences of can openers, the conveniences of good toasters, the conveniences of a blender, the conveniences of all those little appliances that you put in the kitchen to make your life easier. So now every time they saw a deal on something, they'd buy three of them. And that particular hoarding story, I guess I could relate to a little bit. I really could. So a lot of times it's just a matter of doing without for so long that when you're in a place where you don't have to, you go overboard. But I think one of the most important things to remember is the more you have, the more you worry about what you have. The more assets you collect, the more difficult your life becomes. Simplicity and simplifying everything in your life is calming, unclutters your space and your mind, and it's good for you. It's really, really, really good for you. So again, let's concentrate in the weeks to come on putting ourselves in a place that calms us down, reduces some of the stress, makes us happier. We seem to wait for something else to make us happy. We seem to wait for things to happen that will make things better for us. There's no one coming. There's no knight on a white horse. There's no divine intervention. There's none of those things. This is not about religion. This is not about God. This is not about any of those things. This is about you, your own personal strength and what you have the ability to do for yourself. Take advantage of it and get yourself to the best place possible so that you can be that person that you really want to be. So moving on, though, this morning when I started going over the internet, I found some very, very strange stories, and it always makes me laugh what people are willing to read. So the first story I find in New Jersey is a picture of a fairly nice-looking motel and some plainclothes policemen standing out front, and it says the subtitle of the story is "Dead Body Found Under a Bed in Motel Appears to Have Been There for 5 Years." So, having managed hotels for several years, it just made me laugh. And I thought to myself, oh my Lord, what kind of maids do they have? Nobody's ever looked under the bed in 5 years. Made me laugh. My son came in the room and he said, "What's up?" And I told them about this story. So I said, "That's impossible. A rotting human body under a bed. I mean, the smell in that room must have been horrific." So then it even goes on to do an interview with the maid. "I clean that room every day. I told my boss it smelled terrible. I hated being in that room. All he told me to do was spray more Febreze." So then I went to Snopes to see if it was for real. And it isn't. It's just something, some organization thinks it's funny to put stories out there and see how many people are gullible enough to believe it. So that made me feel a little bit better. But it made me think about years ago, I managed in a hotel on the beach, and I had 5 floors, and some of the rooms were suites, which, you know, is a whole different cleaning job for a housekeeper. And it was constant that I would have to go and check under beds for girls. And, you know, paper cups, back in the days when you could smoke in some of the rooms, cigarettes, ashtrays would be under beds. And then a few other unmentionables would be under beds. So my oldest grandson was just a little guy. So on Saturdays, which was a big checkout day, he would often come to work with me. And that was his job. He would go scrambling into a room, lay down on his belly, and look under the beds. It was very funny. My girls hated it because inevitably they knew when he was going to be there, there would be an under-the-bed check. He never went without finding something. Never. And sometimes, I remember one time in particular, he looked under a bed and there was somebody's whole suit under a bed. Why somebody put a whole suit under a bed, I will never, ever know. But often there was debris and things like that, things that my girls should have seen and did not. So when I saw this thing about the dead body, I was like, you must be kidding me. And of course they were. So for those of you who don't know what Snopes is an opportunity for you to check some of the stories that we see on the Internet on a regular basis that are often untrue and fabricated by somebody who thinks it's funny to make up things and put them on the Internet. Entertaining, I guess, but a little disarming, too, when they're really bad stories, which happens every now and then as well. So it's S-N-O-P-E-S if you're interested in checking a story that you are wondering as to whether or not it's got any validity. So I wanted to share with all of you, Shelley is in, actually she's in Germany by now, but she was in Belgium for 2 days, and then they moved on to Germany. She is with her sister, Nina, and they are visiting a Nina's son who's in the service, and he's being relocated to Africa. So they had an opportunity to go spend some time with him and his family before they moved to Africa. So that's why she's not on the show. She won't be on the show until probably next Thursday. So I am requesting any of you who listen but never call in, call in. I've got some guests lined up, but I'd love to hear from everybody. And, of course, we have Carrie out there who's still in the throes of trying to get her little boy back. We have Chiquita, who I hear from every now and then, who is the young woman who was having trouble with her mom. And we have a few other guests that have talked on the show on several different occasions. And you're always welcome to call back in. I haven't heard from Elise in a long time. Elise is really, really going gung-ho with her blue-green algae, which is a very, very beneficial product. And, of course, we have John Bolas, who spoke on the show a few weeks ago, the 80-year-old man that I've known for several years. He's wonderful. I'm going to have him on the show again as well. But one of the other things I wanted to talk about, and I'm hoping I can get her on the show, it's a friend of mine that I've known for several years, and she does an amazing treatment to help people get past old injuries, old things that have happened to them, car accidents, a death in their family, an abuse. It's amazing how many people can bury or stuff feelings after they've been hurt in some way. We read all the time. I think one of the most notable ones was Oprah Winfrey talking about when she finally remembered being abused as a child and all the things that happened to her. Our psyche has an amazing ability to bury those things, to keep them someplace where they're not in our mind's eye on a continuum. I guess that's very beneficial and is needed at the time. However, I want everybody to think about something. If you take something, even something good, and bury it, it grows. And consequently, even though you can't see it because it's buried, and it's not in your face because it's buried, it's still growing. You don't stop it from being bigger than what it was to begin with. So the bad part about doing that is that it hurts you in the long run. And then when you finally dig it up, it's a monster. It's really, really a monster. And then you have to deal with it all over again. So this friend of mine does a procedure that actually helps you remember the incident, the episode in your life that caused so much damage, but lessen the significance. Well, let me explain that. If you could remember something vivid, let's go with something that happens to all of us. Let's go to the death of a loved one. You're 15, you lose your grandparent. You loved your grandparent, your grandpa. He was like, you were his favorite, he was your favorite. Very, very, very difficult thing to go through. And I think most of us have gone through that. Some of us, however, because we can't deal with it on a daily basis, we kind of bury it. Maybe we were even there. Maybe we were a part of a vigil at Grandpa's deathbed or something like that. A lot of times families do that and they don't realize the repercussions or the problem that they may be causing for a young person who's involved in it as well. So let's say that's the scenario. Let's say you're a part of that, you're 15 years old, and you the feelings that you have are unbearable. So you bury them. So my friend has a way of bringing them to the forefront, letting you envision them, unbury them, and deal with them with a little less emotion so that you can picture that day, you can visualize that day, and with the visualization comes the feelings of loss and heartache and what am I going to do if I never get to see my grandpa again? And all those feelings come back like they're brand new, like this just happened 15 minutes ago. And she has a way to let it be with you, but not be so emotional, not be so hurtful, not be so damaging to your psyche. And when she does this, it's not like it's gone. It's not like you can't remember it. But you can put it more into perspective now. It's an amazing thing. I'm going to try really hard to have her on the show for a couple days in a row so that we can talk about this, so that we can really discuss what can happen if you can put some of those old memories into perspective. Something else is, of course, the obvious one is some kind of abuse. And it's shocking when we just think about all the celebrities that we, like Oprah, like, no names are coming to me in this moment, but we all know that there's been hundreds of celebrities that have come to grips with having some kind of abuse take place in their lives and having to deal with it. And everything like that, every episode in our life forms us into who we are. And I always thought it was interesting, the movie Dorian Gray, where the man makes a deal with the devil, and a portrait that he has done of himself gets old and scarred from his life, and he stays forever young. And it made me think about not our bodies so much, but what our souls look like from the hurt we endure, from the hurt we inflict on others. All of those things take a toll on who we are. Everything. So imagine being able to let go of something, still remember it, not bury it, so it can get bigger and bigger and bigger, but lessen its hold over you, lessen the significance on who you become. It's a wonderful thing. Very sadly, this lady who does this for many people is not welcomed everywhere, because a lot of our powers that be would rather sell drugs or treatments or all kinds of other things. And if she was able to help, let's say a soldier, let's take a veteran who was in Vietnam. Let's go way back then, because I can talk about that with a little bit of firsthand knowledge. A lot of my friends went to Vietnam. And I must tell you, I don't know any that came back the same. None. Not that they were different in a bad way either. I don't mean to say that they were something was, you know, really, really socially wrong with them when they came back. Some of them they were, but everybody was changed, because you cannot live in a world of war and not have it change who you are. So PTSD, which has a lot of significance today, people understand it a lot more than they did way back when, and I can't even imagine what it must have been like during the some of the other wars. I mean, the South and the North fighting each other. I mean, that must have been horrible. I mean, because you had family that moved south or family that moved north, and families were fighting families. Brothers very often were on opposite sides of a war. I can't even imagine that. But imagine the kind of PTSD that was involved, and they didn't even know what it was. If you have been listening for a while, you know that 1 week we talked almost every day about some of the asylums that were very prevalent, 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s. Even some of them didn't close until the 60s. And many of the clients in these asylums were soldiers who suffered from PTSD, but nobody had diagnosed it yet. Nobody understood it. They suffered greatly. They couldn't deal with loud noises. They couldn't deal with any kind of controversy. I've read stories of some men and women who never spoke again, never said words again. They were so withdrawn to be able to escape all of the, I don't know, the anger and the hatred and the death that they were having to witness every day, that they never spoke again. It must have been an absolutely, positively horrible time. So today, we still have a lot of veterans that suffer from PTSD. For those of you who have never, ever been to a VA hospital, I don't know that I would suggest that everybody go to a VA hospital just to walk around and get a feel, because some of you won't be able to deal with it. But if you can, if you're a giving person, if you do volunteer work, if you're the kind of person that can give of themselves and not have it harm you, because I wouldn't be an advocate of that. But if you can give of your time and your energy, volunteer at a VA hospital. You'll be shocked to see some of the things you see at a VA hospital. There are some men and women who come back from war who live at a VA hospital the rest of their lives. Their quality of life becomes acceptable because it's all they know. But to an outsider looking in, it wouldn't be acceptable. It wouldn't be any place you want to be. And yet, if my friend could walk into a VA hospital and do these treatments on somebody there, imagine what she could do. I watched this work firsthand. I watched this make a difference in somebody firsthand, in person. So I know it's an amazing technique. But a lot of what I prefer to call poo-pooers and people who have an investment in another avenue of getting well don't want to see it, don't want to hear it. But your mind can be your biggest downfall or your biggest asset. Let's face it. Because however you wrap your mind around something is how it becomes or what it becomes. So imagine being able to look at something terrible that happened to you and not have the emotions come with it. It'd be like watching a movie. It would be like looking at something taking place that you could analyze and maybe put a little bit of understanding on in some cases and turn it around so that it's not you. It's not about you. In particular, I think the dealing with the loss of a loved one because that's going to happen to all of us. And some of us deal with it and some of us cannot. So imagine being able to take that part of your life and put it, instead of burying it, just put it someplace where you know about it, you remember it, but it doesn't cause you such deep, deep scars. It doesn't hurt you so very much that you have to pretend like it didn't happen. That is a wonderful thing. And I promise I will have more information on this, and I will have this lady. There's a lot of people that are practicing this method at this point in time. But as I say, it's not always accepted with open arms because it takes away from other avenues of treatment. The other thing that I wanted to talk about today is in the line with hoarding and keeping your home, or what I very frequently refer to as your nest, a good place, is the most important part about keeping your nest organized and empty of debris. Is it's like a personification of you. When you're in the outside world, if everything in your nest is in order, you seem to function better in the outside world. Now, I've been an advocate of this for a very, very, very long time. I have never been what most people would refer to as a clean freak by any stretch of the imagination. I can be very messy. My house can be very dirty. I don't want to give that impression. But organization, it has to be physical as well as mental. So if you're getting up every day and you're going out to a workplace and your bedroom, you don't make your bed, you don't straighten up in the bathroom after you're done, I don't mean clean the toilet bowl. I mean, straighten up so that your your night clothes are hung up, or, you know, just a semblance of organization. Then you go into your kitchen and maybe you fix some breakfast for you and the kids, or maybe you're a single person and you're living all by yourself and you still don't put your coffee cup in the sink or in the dishwasher. And then you get into your car and you have to wipe off the seat before you can sit down, and there's coffee cups and there's candy wrappers and all this stuff is in your car. Here's something you need to understand. This is how the whole rest of your day is going to be: cluttered, disorganized, and not functioning the way it's supposed to. Because you cannot function with all that debris. You cannot. You may think you are. You may imagine that you are. But chances are, big chances are, that you're not. Because there has to be some organization. If you're the kind of a person that has an important job where you make important decisions all day long, and you're trying to keep everybody organized, let's go to a restaurant. Let's go to a restaurant, and you are the manager of a restaurant. And one of the most important things in a restaurant is that everybody works in a flow. The cook has to keep the food coming out. The waitress has to keep the orders coming in. The dishwasher has to keep the dishes clean. Everybody has to move in a flow. In a flow so that all of the guests that walk through the door get treated like guests, like they're important people, like them walking through the door is your source of livelihood, which it is. So if you can't manage that restaurant with some semblance of organization, it's going to be a failure. Hands down, you won't keep that job. You won't, and if you're the owner of that restaurant, you won't keep that restaurant. So it all starts from where you sleep, from where you get up in the morning, from how your nest looks. It all manifests itself into your day. You come out in the morning and you do these little things. Again, I'm not saying get out the vacuum cleaner and the mop. I'm just saying keep the clutter out of your life. Your outside life will run a lot smoother. Vehicles. I know, because my vehicle right now is a mess. I had a car accident a few months ago. Ever since then, I haven't washed my car. I mean, I've washed the outside, but I haven't really scrubbed the inside like I used to keep it. And I realized I'm annoyed with it because now it's got a big boo-boo on it, and I didn't fix it because I'm going to trade it in or give it to somebody else and get another car. So I see when I get in my car to go to a business meeting or something, I'm not in the right frame of mind. And it's because my car is cluttered. It's because my car isn't the best it can be because of me. So the rest of my day, the next meeting I go to, or the next anything, the next doctor's appointment I go to, it doesn't go as smoothly as what it could go if when I got into my car, everything was clean, it smelled nice, there was no papers on the floor, no sweater in the back seat, all that kind of stuff would make me, and it put me in a different place so that the rest of my day is better than what it's going to be if I don't. All these things for me are really, really important. And if you can make them important for you, things will go smoother for you. Now, at the end of a day, that's something else I want to talk about, because when we started talking about stress, about my granddaughter and about all those kind of things, there's some other things that you should be doing at night. It's called winding down. Winding down at the end of your evening. You have your dinner. You straighten up the kitchen. You turn off the light in the kitchen, and everything is straightened up so that when you come back out in the morning, you don't face a mess. What happens when you come out in the kitchen and you face a mess in the morning? It can ruin your whole day. It can take a toll on you for the rest of the day. So straighten up the kitchen before you go to sit and watch TV or go play on the computer or go play games on your Xbox or whatever it is you do in the evening. You make sure that when you walk back into the kitchen, it's going to look welcoming. It's not going to put you in a bad frame of mind. Then what you're going to do, the same thing early in the morning when you made your bed. You're going to be so happy to walk in a bedroom where the bed is made and everything is straightened up. There's not clothes all over that you have to throw on the floor before you get into bed. All of these things seem so like nothing in the big scheme, right? In the big picture, a messy bedroom, everybody rolls their eyes at you and says, who cares? Nobody sees my bedroom. You care. It's about keeping your space uncluttered so that your head stays uncluttered. It's about keeping your area so that you can move freely and feel unencumbered by your junk. So, so important. All of those things will help alleviate the stress, the worry, the anger that's invoked in all of us when things don't seem to be going right. 9 times out of 10, or maybe 8 times out of 10, when things seem so screwed up and you're looking for somebody to blame, look in the mirror. Look in the mirror. And all the things that I've talked to you about today will keep things in a better place, in better perspective. Keeping everything so that you can deal with it, so that you're happy to be there, so that you're comfortable, all maintains a sense of well-being in you. In you. It's not about anybody else. It's not about making sure your house is beautiful so all your friends think your house is beautiful. It's not about keeping your kitchen clean because your husband harps at you if the kitchen isn't clean. It's about you. It's about you. Having clean clothes hanging in the closet when you get ready to go someplace. Having clean clothes in the drawers in your bedroom when you get ready to go someplace. So you're not looking all over the place trying to put something together and all rushed and all hectic and crazy like, you know, oh my God, what did I do with this? And oh my God, where is that? It's not good for you, folks. And the only person who can change it is you. And how many times have we talked about that? The person who looks at you in the mirror is the only one who can make things better for you. So now we're back to, you have a big family. You're taking care of 3 or 4 kids. You're going to teach your kids, too. You're not going to make it a war zone, but you're going to show them the difference between having things be nice. I wish somebody had done this for me when I was young. Because it seemed like everything was my responsibility to keep it a certain way, and most often I couldn't do it. Sometimes I think about what my bedroom looked like when the kids were little, and I think to myself, oh my God, how did I even function? It's start early, understand that it's for you, that it serves you better than any one other thing that you can do for yourself. Keep in your space, organized, clean, and knowing where everything is before you have to start a day. If you're the kind of person that gets up at 6 o'clock in the morning, has to be to work at 8 o'clock in the morning, works until 6 o'clock at night, do yourself a favor. Get your life organized. Get things, everything in their place so that you can do what you need to do. Otherwise, you struggle all the time. And struggle is what causes the stress, and stress is what causes the illnesses, and the illnesses put you at a standstill. And then pretty soon you can't do the things that you want to do. It's a vicious cycle, a vicious, vicious cycle. So tomorrow we are going to talk about bullying, of course. It's Tuesday, and we're going to talk about bullying. And we're going to talk a little bit about bullying in the workplace. I had a conversation with somebody this past week who's been working someplace where they get no recognition. They were told if they got this certification and if they got that certification and if they did this, and they did all the things that were requested of them at their own cost, and accepted a position thinking that when they did all these extra expenditures and studies, etc., that they not only would make more money, they would be in a more appropriate seat of responsibility, because they showed responsibility, because they went out and did what was requested of them, and their job would be a little more supervisory and not so labor intensive. Instead, because of their hard work, because they are capable and efficient and proficient at what they were asked to do, they never got any place. They never got taken to a higher seat in the pyramid of this business. They never got any recognition. They never no remuneration for all of the extra expense that they incurred in order to honor the requests that were made of them. And they're hurt. They're angry. They feel as though they were taken advantage of. When they shared all of this with me, I was inclined to agree with them. And I also said, have you had a discussion? And have you voiced your opinion on what was said to you in the very beginning, what has actually occurred, where you are now? And they said, yes, they even mentioned that someone else who started at the same time, who didn't move forward with any of the things that they did, actually had the easier job. And I was like, how did that happen? Well, I don't know. I said, is it because you're really, really good at this tough job? And he said, I don't know. So that's bullying. That's being bullied by your boss. That's being bullied by the authoritative position in your company. And that's not okay either. That's in the grown-up world just as bad as a schoolyard fight. It's not nice to be promised something and be told that if you do this, 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 and this, that, you'll get this, 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 and this, and then never get any recognition. And that is a source of bullying. And it's rampant today. It's not unusual to talk to somebody who has taken a position someplace, who has all of the abilities to handle a job and doesn't get recognized, nothing takes place for them. So we're going to talk about that tomorrow. And if anybody has any stories where they've gone in and accepted a position and gone the extra 10 yards to better their position with the company and still doesn't get any recognition, give me a call and let's talk about it, because I think that it's a shame out there. Jobs are hard to find today. And if you have somebody that is good at their job and has kept all their promises and does everything that has been requested of them, they need to be at the very least recognized. We're not just talking about money here. We're talking about actions and respect and all the things that go with that. So, on everybody to go out and have a great day today. The sun is shining beautifully here right now. We'll probably get rain this afternoon, but right now it's gorgeous. Everybody have a great day, and we'll be back tomorrow morning. God bless everybody. Have a great one. Bye-bye.